You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast. I am Hody Johns, and I know what you're thinking. That's not Chris Spangle, and this is supposed to be the Chris Spangle show. You know those weeks, man, I remember these growing up where you would tune into the Rush Limbaugh show, and it's not Rush Limbaugh. And there's that feeling of disappointment. All I can say is I know exactly how you feel right now, and I'm right there with you. I am here with the best, the greatest, myself, of course, is who I'm talking about. But I'm also here with Reinhold. Reinhold, your usual Chris Spangle. So, you know what? Some of it is carrying over. We're getting some blend. Reinhold, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. You're getting the worst of the Chris Spangle show right now with me coming on. So
no, come on.
No.
I mean, I don't want to choose between Harry, Chris, and Reinhold. That's a choice nobody wants to have to make. That's bad.
Sophie's choice, right? Yeah.
Right.
No, it's been a good week.
Good.
Busy week. So I'm glad for a break so I can do this.
Fantastic. And I am getting a birthday boy. Brian, happy birthday. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, sir. Thank you. And glad to be here. It's, you know, a little early. And it's been, as just like Reinhold said, it's been an insanely busy week. But looking forward to spending a quality birthday cleaning out the garage after this is over. So, fun times ahead.
Fantastic. Well, you know, we got a special one today. You know, nobody can substitute what Chris Spangle does and the way he talks about it. And so you get, I'm going to do something completely different. I'm not even going to try to compete with what Chris does and his insights and his brains. I'm going to do something a little different. What we are going to do is we're going to talk about personal stories that we have had with government interactions that have been negative, kind of things that have made us into libertarians and helped, or I guess, even if it's not something that, even if we were libertarian beforehand, something that helped shape us. I find that as libertarians, you hear us talk about national, global, very large, sweeping issues. And a lot of times these aren't personal. And so as libertarians, like, man, you're always complaining on behalf of somebody else. And I feel like it's just important to hear that it's affected us as well, that government overreach has hit us too. And some people, it's going to be big ways and small ways. I've gathered up some stories from some of my friends here that have gone through that. And of course, we're going to share our own personal stories as well. But these are important to hear because then you say, okay, so this really does hit home. Because I think we're all, there's a Calvin and Hobbes comic, and in it, they get robbed. And the dad says, I guess we're all someone else to someone else. Or maybe it's his mom that says that. One of his parents says that. And I remember that always struck me because I was like, man, that is so true. You just think it's the kind of thing that happens to somebody else and that happens to you. And you're going to hear a lot of stories that just, it may be the someone else story. Maybe it's something that happened to you, but it's all happened to one of us, to somebody that, if you know us, then this is either stories about us or a close relationship. You are only 1 or 2 degrees removed from all of these stories, that these are very close and personal. And so good morning, everybody. Glad to hear from you. Love to see you here. I'm just so happy to have you with us. All right. So let's get started on this heavy episode here. Brian, your birthday. I will allow you to go first and share your story of government interaction in your life. Go ahead.
I've got the statist view of it. And it's going over how the Department of Children's Services interacts with families. And I've been on the, the good end of receiving it. One of the things that I always find is a problem with anarchism and things like that is that there are a lot of pieces that where government has to unfortunately step up when it comes into raising children. I think it should be a last resort, but there are a lot of last resorts out there. And the one thing I don't want to see happen is a child being taken away from a family because some bureaucrat deemed them unworthy. That being said, we adopted 4 kids out of foster care, as I've said before, ad nauseum. But they were good reasons. It wasn't that they were, they were poor, we don't want them being raised in poor families. There was abuse going on. And in those cases, somebody had to step in. As I said, it was someone's worst day, which ended up being our best day when our kids got placed with us. So it's, when you look at one side sees it as insanely unfair and the other side sees it as insanely fair, starting out with that, there's a time where you want society or family to step in and help with families that are struggling. But there are some times that you just can't do it. It's just like if someone has a significant mental illness and refuses to get help or treatment, you can't do anything about it. They have to want to change. And if they don't want to change due to various psychological or drug dependency issues, they're going to be that way. And you have to go in and save these kids. So looking at that, the government's been very involved in our lives. For the first decade, we had our kids with us, whether it was silly home studies, daily follow-ups, things like that, where they were coming into our house. We welcomed them, obviously, because if we didn't, our kids wouldn't be here. But you see the waste in the system, and you also see the politics. And for something that really good that happened to our family, we saw all the terrible things they were doing to other families. We were on the receiving end of foster kids. We were on the receiving end of a number of kids that probably shouldn't have been taken out. But the vast majority pretty much should have been a long time ago. So looking at that, it's hard to get, looking at it as a totally negative experience. Obviously, it's a net positive. My kids are now grown and they've turned into mostly responsible adult children. Thank you very much. I think where their lives would have been if nothing was there to help them or their families, or if they just let things go, that the cycle of abuse that we see would just continue. I know that the parents that lost them grieved in their own way. In some cases, there was some relief, but that being said, I think that the government intrusion has to be balanced. Somehow we have to get better at managing that as opposed to eliminating it, because when we eliminate it, I don't know if there's anything there besides basically the equivalent of a posse or HOA management walking in and saying, you're not doing a good job of raising your kids. And that's what concerns me the most. So,
I think there is a time that I think libertarians, as you've kind of noticed, we get in the habit of saying that everything that the government is doing is not necessary. And there's some things there's some things that aren't necessary, a bit of road piracy here, a bit of taxation there, whatever you want to point to, it says is unnecessary. But then you look at some things and you just kind of say this is a time when somebody has to step in and do something. And I think that it's okay to say, I do want this done. I just don't want my politician or bureaucrat or whatever it is to do it.
Right.
But yeah, as you've noticed, there's breakdowns in communication, and I'm glad that your foster kids found you and a healthy home. And that's,
They may disagree with you some days, but
yeah. I'm sure if they see the old situation, it sounds like
they would
change.
Yeah, I will never claim to be perfect. Sorry, Reynold, go ahead.
That's fine. It's something that a lot of people get confused with on the whole libertarian thing, and just because something is being done by the government doesn't mean it's not a necessary thing to be done. So there are a lot of things that government does that we need to have done. We believe that it would be done better if it were a non-forced, non-government solution. But since that solution doesn't exist, something has to exist, or we for some things. I mean, there's just no getting around that, right? So that's the world that libertarians have to live in, and a lot of libertarians don't seem to grasp that. Now, my take on it has always been, we should be out there, if we really believe in what we're saying, we should be out there living that and doing that and finding solutions for those things, because there's no reason not to. I mean, the government isn't telling us we can't. Mm-hmm. So if we could find solutions for poverty or other issues, you know, family issues like this, if we can find better solutions and put them in place so that the government doesn't need to come in and do that work anymore, then people will stop having the government do it because there's no need for it. The problem is nobody's doing that. Everybody's waiting for the government to stop doing it before they start building up a solution. And that's never going to be, that's never going to convince anybody to go that route, because they know that there's a need that's there. It has to be filled some way. So they're taking the only option available to them right now, which is government. And that's right. The biggest problem with how I view a lot of people on both sides of the aisle, on the left and the right, is that they see the problems, they want to fix it, they only think government is the solution, right? If we would get out there and fix the things, like a good political leader to me would be somebody who'd come up and said, we're going to publicize that there's a need for this. We're going to provide you ways to do this on your own and solve it on your own and make it a point to do, right? And find, you know, they can come up with solutions that doesn't require them to go and have a law made if they wanted to, right? If that was the push. So that's what I look for in any kind of political leader, is finding a way to do those things without, you know, requiring putting a gun to your head to make it happen.
Yeah, there's and I don't want to hijack, obviously I'm the anarchist in the room here with some friendly minarchists here. I don't want to hijack Chris's show. I mean, the idea is I'm not here to preach the fundamentals of philosophy or how it would work, or so we do that way too often. I mean, if we just talk about scaling this back, one of my favorite TED Talks ever is Molly McGrath Tierney. If you listen to a lot of me, you've probably heard me talk about this before. It's called Rethinking Foster Care. I'm going to go ahead and link that in the comments. And it is one. Now, she's not an anarchist. She actually works for, I think, the Baltimore Child Protection Services, and talks about how this is like taking kids away is they're incentivized to do it. They're expected to do it. It's something they're doing. It's something that she actually tries to fix the home first. They by far have the most successful Child Protective Services program as far as like lowest amounts of abuse and whatnot like that. And it's done by trying to reform the families first. Now, as Brian said, there are times she is like, yeah, we got to get them out of here first. And that happens. But it's one of those where it's like, she kind of blows the lid on the government, you know, taking them away immediately 98% of the time when it would be better to just fix the home, or it was a simple mistake, or helping them out. And I'm going to go ahead and link that right now. Reinhold, why don't you share a story that you have, my friend?
Well, you know, being a white male, I've never had any negative interactions at all with the government in any way.
Bro, same.
So, no, I'm just obviously joking. I can think of a few dozen probably, but a couple good ones that come to mind are partially because of where I live. I live in the state of Indiana, which is for some reason wants to be the daddy of everybody and tell everybody how they should live. So the lighter note would be the ones where I was making a side living playing poker online. And then one day they decided it's going to be illegal to do that now. Right. So I had income coming in from playing poker, and then just on Black Friday, just it was gone. You know, that income is gone now. So I didn't, and a lot of people couldn't even get to the money that they had in the systems, right? It took like a year or two for people to get that money out of those systems because it was all frozen. And that was an interesting one where the U.S. federal government decided to tell companies operating in other countries that they can't operate their service people inside the United States, right? And they did that by taking over their domain names, right? And I'm trying to figure out how they thought they had the authority to do this. I don't know where that comes from, but that was one of the things that they did. And that's, you know, that's kind of a minor annoyance one. But the bigger one is my wife was diagnosed with cancer about 10 years ago. Coming up on, it's been 9 years now, I think, because it's 9 years September. And it was stage four, it was very serious cancer. And she had to go through 2 years of chemotherapy, had a second occurrence, had to go through more chemotherapy for that. During that time, she was not allowed to even discuss possible alternatives to the nausea that she had and the symptoms that she got from the chemotherapy, which was so devastating to her body, just trying to fight off this disease. So she would bring up, you know, could I maybe smoke some marijuana? And the doctor had to turn away and ignore her because the law states that if he acknowledges it, he can lose his license and possibly go to jail. So she had to kind of figure that kind of way out. And in order to solve that problem, you know, we have to make the choice. Do we break the law, potentially losing my job, potentially losing my insurance that's helping pay to keep her alive, just because there is an option for her to fight the nausea and other symptoms that she was having from chemotherapy, because some people decided that nobody should be allowed to do that. You know, what gives people the right to do that, to tell my wife and myself that we have to risk losing our liberty, our security, going, we have to go to jail, we have to lose my job, we have to lose my insurance, she's going to die because they won't let her legally go get a medicine that most doctors, 99% of the doctors say, is very effective at fighting the exact thing that she was trying to treat, right? And that's what really irritates me the most, is that they make these decisions about your life, your health, things that you have to do, and they put the force of government behind it. They put the gun to your head, and they put you in a position where you have to make choices that could ruin your life. And it shouldn't have to be that way. There's no reason it should have to be that way. So yeah, that's one example for me.
Right. You're tough.
It's, you know, the funny thing is if there was no enforcement of that law, if the various state agencies and things like that, doctors probably wouldn't be as worried. But you know that there's some bureaucrat, some politician who is going to, quote, do something about this. And it's probably sending people out to entrap doctors in those discussions.
Definitely. I mean, there's stories about people who were going out and basically just pretending that they had illnesses and asking those questions and seeing if they get people to fall for it. Yeah. But it's also the selective enforcement too.
Yep.
You know, I probably can get away with doing some things because I don't come off as somebody who they're targeting or would put in a high bracket of, oh, this guy's going out and getting illegal drugs. But what if I fit more of a mold, you know, more of a identity that would be more likely to do that as according to the statistics, right?
According to whatever numbers that the bureaucrats have pulled out of their keister.
If I lived in a poorer area, if I had a different skin color, you know, there's so many different things that the police will go, oh, we better keep an eye on this guy because he fits this profile. And they say they don't profile, but they profile because they do it all the time. And
they don't profile. They don't have quotas, they have standards. That's the term. If you ever ask them, so do you guys have a quota for arrests? Just like when it gets back to DCS, you know, they have to, they plan, you should be removing X amount of children. You should be doing this. It's building to the least common denominator, making things so structured and rigid that nobody has any common sense other than saying, well, I have to do this because it's the law. It doesn't matter. I mean, this is insane. And thankfully, some states, just to point out, like Michigan, Illinois, Ohio, and I think Ohio's got it pretty much in Kentucky now as well. I mean, India is pretty much surrounded at this point. At some point, the states just say, just forget it. It's going to be here. Just deal with it.
Utah did it. Like, yeah. When Utah's ahead of Indiana, problems, man.
I've always said that Indiana was probably going to be the last state to fully legalize marijuana, just because there's this mindset here that, you know, they know better than me on how to do certain things. Now, they'll fight and complain if you say, oh, wear a mask or this, you know, because they're going to fight that tyranny. But something like this, it's mind-boggling how they just don't see the hypocrisy. That they think they know so much better about how to live my life than I do.
I think it's just more, at least I've seen this personally, that people are coming around to it. Same-sex marriage in the state of Indiana and things like that. You know, we had Pence for a while. Thank you, Pence, for screwing up concert tours for me when you were in office here. That people are coming around. And when you look at the numbers, and I mean, Dennis, you and I can go back. Did you ever think that not only would marijuana be legalized in any state in this country, gay marriage, all the other things that you and I grew up with that were not even talked about, were just absolutely that this is the worst thing you can be thinking of doing, are slowly becoming legal. And India is just a laggard in some of these things. So I always thought it's going to happen. Yeah.
I always thought they would happen because eventually people are just going to get tired of it. And if you look at the polling shows the majority of people want this stuff, right? The majority of people supported same-sex marriage. Once it started to hit the majority of people, the politicians start to listen. Once you get, you know, in Indiana, the majority of people in Indiana want legal marijuana. That's the reality of it. But it's not happening because it takes – we have politicians now who are very adept gaining political power by setting people against each other, right?
Oh, yeah.
And finding some issue that is most likely not an issue, but making it a huge one and making people go, I don't care about everything else. This is the thing I need to have this person in because of that, right? And it's like, people don't see it, right? And that's the thing, is it's easy to manipulate somebody through emotions.
Yeah,
it's very, very strong, especially anger, disgust, hate, that sort of thing. Those are very strong and easy to manipulate emotions. And of all the things that we teach in schools these days, learning how to critically think and learning how to identify propaganda and how you be manipulated, those are the things that should be taught. Right. So those are the things that you teach somebody how to think. You teach somebody how to learn, and then you let them go learn all the day. You don't have to sit there and recite dates to people and tell them all this stuff. That information is available. You just have to give them the desire to want that stuff. You have to give them the knowledge on how to interpret what you're reading, on how to become a better learner. And then people will crave it and do it themselves. And most people nowadays, when they're in school, are so bored and angered and they don't have anything to do with learning because it's such a horrible process that they have to go through now. It's not, we're not teaching people well enough, in my opinion, on that, on how to identify how they're being manipulated by politicians.
But that gets right back to, what are the schools wanting to do? They're wanting to have an assembly line of, you know, bodies come in. We play with their minds for 13 years. And we push them out the door and do it the most efficient way possible. Don't sit there and put any thought into it or any, you know, giving anybody what they want. Just let's get as many bodies out the door as we can so we can check off a box and say that we're awesome.
What's the problem with the government schools, the same with anything government, is you're introducing politics into a solution that doesn't need politics to solve, right? Schools should be good. Schools should be available to everybody. They should be accessible to everybody. We used to do that with private means, but the government got involved and the government started mandating that people go, and government started paying for people to go, and the government started dictating how those schools are going to be run. So as soon as you do that, you introduce politics into those, that equation that does not need to be there.
Yep.
And now you've got politicians making decisions for people on how to think almost by doing that. And it's, you know, that's, it's like getting involved with the doctors and telling the doctors what they can do, or getting involved with any industry that they have no business being in. You end up like, you know, National Endowment for the Arts. They shouldn't be asking for any government money for there, because as soon as you let the government in there, then they start dictating what the NEA can support. They can't support. If you want that to be a totally free from government agency, it can't be a government agency. You have to make it a non-government organization and do it without getting taxpayer money to fund it.
The tough part is the taxpayer money part, because obviously we'd love to see people choose their own schools. And I think the step of the funding follows the kids, not the schools. It's a step in the right direction, at least. So I would love to see more schools open up and start being competitive, because you can tell you this much, when a school's really good, people not only fight like hell to get into that school, but they'll lie, cheat, and steal to say that they live in that district or whatever else. We had a really good middle school here that my kids fortunately went to. We were in the district, so they got obviously in, and it was a really good experience because they were like top 10 middle school in Indiana. But if you went, you know, 8 miles either direction, you're out of district, and it was a completely different experience. So I would love to see that more happen here. And that's one way to effectively end government interference in those things, especially like we just had it up here in Northern Indiana. One of the school board meetings during public comment, and it was about the mask mandates and stuff like that. The police, the Allen County Sheriff's Department came up and said that they should not run public comment due to concerns for safety in the building, which is always their go-to of, you know, well, we don't think this is going to be safe, so we're going to shut down speech and any questions about it. So,
yeah, the school system is to say it's archaic is kind of kind. I mean, it is one of the least evolved industries that we have. And it's funny because, you know, systems and countries and stuff that are doing that better than us are kind of abandoning the system that we're doing, and we're stuck in it. Obviously nobody's doing a fantastic job at it, but you know, everybody's throwing more money and getting less results at it. America's not unique in that regard. But anyway, I don't want to hijack your story though, Reinhold, because I think I actually want that to bleed into my story, because I can relate on both counts. Your gambling one, so my brothers and I, we have this chat, and every day there's some, and I get it. When you hear a gambler say something's a sure thing, that means it's often not a sure thing. But what they do is they post, he goes through all the gambles, and he's like, hey, look, if you bet $10 against the Knicks and $10 for the Knicks today, you can come out ahead $20 or something. Like, you know, they have these little deals where you actually can't lose. Like if you make two bets, one of them pays out more than the other one loses, and so you end up getting more money every time. Now, of course, there's the sure thing sometimes, like somebody will throw up a dumb bet. They'll be like, hey, you know, you win $100 if Tom Brady doesn't throw 10 touchdown passes today. It's like, well, considering the NFL record is 7, that's not going to happen. So sure, I'll take that bet. This is literally free money, and it's probably about, I mean, I don't want to exaggerate it, it's probably about $25 a day, but it adds up. And I'm not allowed to do it because I'm in Utah. My whole state has a ban on it. I cannot. I even, when I typed in my zip code, when I tried to sign up, they're like, yeah, I got bad news for you, son. You can't do it. And then I, of course, you know me, I tried to lie about my zip code. And they're like, yeah, we got where your phone's device is located at right now, and you can't do that. You can't make these bets. So I mean, it's $200 a week I'm missing out on. This is over $200 a week I could just have, right? Because they just go through and they're like, make these two bets and you'll always win. And, you know, and then of course there's the crazy bet that'll never happen, but I'm talking about literal sure thing bets and I can't do it. Part two, the medical side, right? You know, Ryan, hold on. I'm sorry about what your wife is going through. And Jamie goes through something very similar. So she doesn't have stage four cancer, but she has scoliosis. It's extremely painful. And she was put on opioids very young, right? I mean, young. And it's a process every month. And it's a scary process pretty much every month because she'll get these. She'll go see a doctor, and there's some prescriptions that the doctor is allowed to write 3-4 at a time. There's some he's only allowed to write 1-4. There's some that are good for 3 months, that are some that are good for 1 month. So this is a monthly process of like seeing your doctor and checking in with him. And then you take those and you go to the pharmacy, and then the pharmacy has to confirm that with the doctor and with the system. And there are some times when it's just like, oh, the doctor wrote this. But when he wrote it, it was 2 days before your prescription expired. And we're like, well, yeah, because, you know, we wanted, you know, ahead of time. Like, we don't want to run out first. And it's like, yeah, so these two extra days aren't valid. And just it's a process every month. And then the worst, and this has happened, thankfully, only a couple times in about the 10 years that we've been dating, but it's happened a couple of times. Is that they'll and I got to say about every time they're like, oh, there's some kind of problem, but we spend enough time with them on the phone and we talk them through it. But sometimes they're just like, yeah, sorry, we can't get a hold of the doctor to confirm our issue. We, you know, he's busy. One time he's on vacation. We can't fill your prescription. Now, when Jamie runs out of her prescription, this is not. And I mean, it's only happened for a day at a time before, but it's not one of those like, oh, I have a headache now. She's rolling on the floor. She actually got rug burns from rolling around on the floor in agony, suffers seizures. And I've even been in the EMT before and I hadn't seen a seizure outside of like the hospital. And it is one of the, like, it was just the scariest. I mean, it was terrifying, and it was so, and I think when it's, again, it's just one of those things you think happens to somebody else, but we're all somebody else to somebody else. And this is just one of those things that I don't think people think about because they just think the law is good enough for most people. But I'm just like, if you knew it wasn't good enough for Jamie, or if you were in my shoes, how hard would you be fighting against this? Like to make it so that you could get these things over the counter. And then, now in Utah, we barely kind of legalize weed. There's, of course, nobody's totally legalized it because of the way the federal law goes, but there's non-enforcement policies and allowing people to get certain licenses and medical exemptions and whatnot. And we just barely got some of that low hanging fruit. And the doctor got it and was like, all right, so good news, you know, I've got my license, so I don't have to. So similar to what your doctor did, Reinhold, where he didn't have to pretend to not hear the suggestion anymore. He could actually be like, now I can not only hear the suggestion, I can recommend it. And I absolutely recommend it to you. And then here comes the issue. And this is where the FDA gets me. They have three business companies that are allowed to prescribe opioids. But all of them are monopolized at the dosage range that they're at. So they don't compete. There's no competition there. There's only one of them that's allowed to, you know, give it in, you know, 100, you know, cc's, and only one that's allowed to. I'm not sure that Jamie does all the work on that, whatever milligrams, whatever it is they use, you know, only one, so they get 50. So we're on one, Jamie's on one. And so it's like, well, we want to slowly reduce this and then bump up the marijuana one, get you flipped over because, you know, much less side effects. It's going to be better for you. It's even better at pain management. And she goes to go from like, you know, the one at 85, which costs us, you know, like $300 a month, to go to like 60. Oh, that's $800 a month if you're going to go down in dosage, because that company's monopoly, you know, that's just where they're at. And it's like, okay, so we're kind of stuck here. And they actually, it like increases the lower the dose you get, to try and keep you on opioids. And it's just one of those that is so patently corrupt, crony, awful. You look at countries that, you know, if they don't have their opioids regulated, and these are patches that, I mean, we're talking $20 for a month. It is it is absurdly low price in a free market, but scarcely any countries have it. Jamie and I would have to move to, you know, Lithuania or something like that in order to get these prices that we're talking about. And it's just, it is painful, it's expensive, it's absurd, and it's hard to see. Like, I mean, this is a terror that we have once a month, because like I said, like, we just have to hope they take it. We call, we cross our fingers. We know that they're always going to be like, wait, this doesn't make sense. You got this 3 months ago. There's still 2 days here, still 1 day here. Let me call this. And we just, every month there's this terror that she is going to be having these seizures, having this extreme pain, having this difficulty. And I get so upset because people act like this isn't a big deal, like the FDA generally does a good job or something. And this is the reality. This is it. And I don't care if they do a good, if you think they do a good job with their food pyramid or my plate or whatever it is these days, you know, your view of the FDA is not what mine is. And her story is kind of why I wanted to share. But yeah, go mm-hmm. ahead, Ryan.
Well, in defense of Lithuania, I grew up with two immigrants from Lithuania, and they say it's a beautiful country. So please don't knock Lithuania. It's a beautiful country. Audrey, Rita, I'm here defending your country.
Better opioids. Yeah. Love you, Lithuania. Thank you.
I mean, there's just so much, you know, capture of the process by these big pharma groups, by big food, by big, you know, oil, by big, you know, toilet plungers, whatever. All of these groups have dedicated legal staffs that are, you know, experienced in this and spend millions and millions of dollars a year, not just in lobbying, but just knowing the intricacies. And they usually have helped write the stupid bills that keep them in business. I've seen that. I've seen, you know, it's like when you see the kid that can't get a wheelchair because it's $15,000. And then the plans are on there to go to Home Depot, and the Home Depot people build one out of PVC pipe for $100 with the electric motor and everything. It's like, what the freaking hell's going on here? And that's just a wheelchair. That's not what you're going through with the meds and everything else. And once again, it gets back to, we're going to just make this process. This is the process. There is no, you know, if you go outside the process, you have to file an appeal. The appeal will be reviewed in 7 days by a person who will rubber stamp denying it, who will then go ahead. Then you do the second appeal, which then goes to another group who will then rubber stamp that denial. And then maybe you can get to a warm body. Oh, by the way, we've spent the last month and a half writhing on the floor because, you know, we could have just given this to you. So, and why do people go to the black market? Because there's a need that's unfulfilled, and it's government getting in the way once again. And we know it isn't just this. It's with things like Medicare, where, you know, they give you 100 days now in a nursing home. If you have a serious event, 100 days, bye. Doesn't matter where you're at and if you're able to care for yourself or not. It's, well, you know, you got to have a really good reason to keep staying here. Otherwise, bye. You've been paying money into the system for how many decades? And then it's just like, well, you know, we come up with this 100-day number because it's a big round number. So that's the thought that's going into this. And there are people that are specifically trained to navigate around this. And if you look at all the tax attorneys and all these other groups that have to exist because of the government, it's just really sad for a simple personal decision that should only take like 3 seconds between person, their doctor, their spouse, everybody else to make a decision and say, yeah, we need to stay here. This isn't, or we need to keep getting this medicine. Government just comes in and says, no, because they made this law that's been on the books for however stupid amount of time.
Ryan Hold, I'm sure. I mean, anything you want to share?
Well, I mean, there's government problems there too, but there's also just straight up insurance issues, right? So we've got insurance getting between doctors and patients. Uh-huh. dictating what the doctors can do and can't do. And if you really want to understand why there's a push for single payer national health care, it's because the medical system we have in this country right now is completely and totally broken in every possible way. Part of it's because of government, part of it's because of private insurance, part of it's because of a lot of different things. But the reasons why aren't the issue. People see that it's broken. They don't want it to be broken anymore. They don't have an alternative that they trust. So they turn to the only other option that's being presented to them, and that is government taking over. So something I said a long time, I said this in the 80s to some people, that having a quasi government involved private healthcare system is never going to work, because it's like the worst of all aspects. And you need to either say we need to have this to be completely privately run, where we have people taking care of other people just because they know that they need to be taken care of, or we have to have it fully government run. If you try to do this in between stuff, nobody's going to be serviced properly. It's going to be a failure. And that's what it's done. It's ballooned in price because people are going in there and finding ways to make money out of it. You know, I mean, that's all insurance is a middleman, right? If you think about it, the insurance company is trying to make a profit. So they know that what you pay into insurance, for most people, what you pay in insurance is more than actually gets paid out, because they wouldn't be making money if that wasn't the case, right? So there are people who come off pretty good from that. I think my family might be one of them. But it's important to have insurance, but I think it should be more catastrophic healthcare insurance,
right?
Like what happened to me, if you have like a surgery and recovery and everything else, that may be like $1 million or whatever. That's covered under that insurance, which is a much lower cost. And anything up to $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 a year or whatever, pay for it out of your pocket. Because if you pay for it out of your pocket and you're paying directly to the doctor and the insurance isn't getting involved, you're not going to have that add-on fee. You know, you'll be able to negotiate prices. It's a better way to go. Doctors spend at least a third of their week paying people to deal with insurance companies, mm-hmm. right? All that time is being wasted with that instead of just helping people that they need to be helping. So the short of it is medical system we have in this country is completely broken. We need to fix it, and we need to fix it in a way that's smart. And I hate that the only good option that people are hearing about is more government.
Right. Well, look at what happened with Obamacare. Did the healthcare system get better or worse?
It always gets worse because they always try to mix federal and private and
ACA. I have nothing.
It would have been better for people. And I hate to say this as a libertarian, but probably would have been better for people if they had just said government take over, blah. Done.
No.
Get rid of all the insurance companies. I didn't want to see that, but what we've got now is not working.
I have a story on that, Dennis, and I think I've talked about it before, was that one of my customers is a very large healthcare provider, and they provide Medicare or Medicaid services to various states. So there were three companies that were running in a, you know, obviously captured environment running Medicaid for a certain state. This company did a phenomenal job of running it. They went outside the box. If someone wanted to go home but couldn't go home because their house wasn't handicapped accessible, let's say they were injured and look, I can't get the wheelchair up the ramp or up my stairs, they would go and build the ramp. The ramp's like about what, $5,000? How long does it cost to keep somebody in a hospital who can't go home? You know, and wants to go home and wants to that. So they would do these little things like, you know, it makes more sense just to go build the damn ramp than it does to keep them in the hospital for another 3 months while they recuperate. Makes more sense to do these little things. They were really good at it. So what did this state do for that company? Because they were profitable, more profitable than the other two companies, they had to pay back those profits to share with the other two lesser performing companies. And that's what we're talking about here, is that the government comes in and says, we're going to put this up this program to protect you so that, you know, you don't have a massive loss, which with Medicaid, I'm still scratching my head going, how are you going to have a massive loss if you're running Medicaid? The government's backing up every procedure and everything else. But that being said, they had to sit there, do it much better than the others. The state didn't go to the others and say, you need to start doing this. They went to them, went to the company that's doing well and said, pay up. So imagine if you, what's your incentive to perform better next time? If you're the other two companies, you just got yourself a couple hundred million dollars of pure profit for doing nothing. So it's those type of things that just drive me up the wall. And when it comes down to, I think I've always thought when the person that's using the service is not involved at all at the cost, someone else is paying it. There's no price pressure, none whatsoever. If I take you out to a fancy restaurant, Dennis, and I say, order whatever you want, you may normally ordered a steak or something like that. But if I'm buying it, I'm like, dude, get whatever you want. You may get the lobster. You may go ahead and do that. I've seen that happen at sales meetings. It's hilarious when people do that. I'm like, wow, you're a terrible human being. but that's the thing. When there's no consciousness of what the cost structure is, there's no incentive for the market to get better. Mm-hmm. I always thought the best way insurance companies could fix this is simply say, hey, we took the average of what it costs to do a hip replacement. Example, you can't do everything, but just hear me out. A hip replacement is $55,000. Okay. We'll cover up to 55. And this is based on your geography and market prices. We have all that data coming in. It does, by the way, the government has this data. They just don't really readily share it. You've got this budget to go out and find it. If you want to go ahead and go to a super nice hospital that costs $65,000, you know, we'll go ahead and let you go there. You got to pay the other out of pocket, work it out with the hospital. If you find it for $45,000, you want to go to Fred's Hips R Us down the street and have it done, we'll split the savings with you. All of a sudden now, you know, that $55,000, that hip replacement is only $45,000. You get five, I get five. We've saved the money. And in the end, the market's hopefully going to get a better product out of, which it usually does. So I've never understood why insurance companies don't go down that route, other than it involves hospitals having to change their models to all of a sudden start being more transparent with their pricing. And of course, the big problem with transparency of pricing is, of course, government intervention, because government sets the rates for Medicaid and Medicare reimbursement. And if you charge for a service that's lower than what the Medicaid reimbursement rate is, you now have to pay, you now get charged at lower rate to the government, which is now 50% of your procedures.
Yeah. Healthcare is absurd. I think it's bad. I think even when you turn to like a mainstream, like Business Insider, Forbes or something, and they're like, yeah, government increases in healthcare account for like 45 to 90% of what you pay for. And it's like, whoa, it's a mind boggling number. To put kind of a bow on this conversation, let me see here. Hang on. The United States is the second most socialized healthcare system in the world, according to per person payments, as far as what we pay nationally per person. Mm-hmm. So it is, for all those worried about single payer healthcare, we're pretty much there. we also spend a lot privately as well, but we spend a ton per person. Yeah, obviously we're not technically single payer, but it's just one of those that's kind of like
we have better availability, though. That's the one thing I want to caveat. I have relatives that live overseas, and you know, dreaded accident, you know, bad fracture, come back tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Literally come back tomorrow. The surgeon's done his quota for the day. Can't do yours. Come back tomorrow.
There's this show in the UK.
It's ridiculous.
That's that shows like people going to the hospital and they make the whole reason they can have the show is because it's people that the hospital is like, nope, not working on that. And there's this like, I mean, we're talking skin conditions where there's like warts taking over your, like growing over your whole body. And these people are doing this like, hey, I'm not allowed to give you any advice, but if you want to fly across the strait to this country here, I can suddenly give you some advice on your warts and they're doing all these home remedies that they are technically allowed to say in this country. It's just one of those where you're like, wow, like things have gotten really weird out there. Healthcare differs from country to country and it differs on what you're talking about. So like, I love the dunk on the UK system because it's kind of easy. I mean, they always seem to do something like kick somebody who's like on their last legs out of a hospital bed just because they're like, oh, there's no helping you anymore, and leave them dying on the street agonizingly. But then there's something like they don't regulate like EpiPens, like epinephrine. And so our EpiPens over here are like $300 and their EpiPens are like, it's like two, it's like right next to the Charms Blow Pops for the same price. You're like, oh, $1.50. You're like, I'll take that. You know, it's like, well, now hold on here. This is working so well. That is not, what are you doing?
Yeah. But you know what drove that up? Cause it was mostly generic. They pretty much had capture on it. And it was, I'm trying to remember which senator's daughter was the CEO of the company that makes the EpiPen.
Oh, was it?
And what they did was,
I remember the situation. It was
Senator's daughter was a CEO of the company that makes the EpiPens. They passed a federal law that required that they have EpiPens in every single school. And the day after that happened, the price went boom on all the EpiPens.
I mean, I remember, and it coincided with the day it got monopolized. And this is one kind of where Bernie Sanders, you know, of course, came to fame because he was like, this is why we should let the government monopolize it, because look at what happens when private companies monopolize it. And I'm like, the only reason they could do that is because you gave these people monopoly. Anyway, we have a lot of stories to cover today. We could get stuck on healthcare for a long time and probably should, because when you have healthcare issues, that's about as bad as things get, right? Like this is, it's kind of a core libertarian thing to, you know, life, liberty, pursuit, we want the life part kind of featured prominently. But I do want to get to some more of these stories here just from some of my friends. So there's one, and you'll find this link in the description of this show. And I have a friend, who is impacted by this. I'm going to go ahead and link this news story as well for those who would like to see it, but here you go, for the chat, a woman. And so this is in Bourbon, hey, you're looking at Indiana, like South Bend. So her house burned down and she had a trailer on her property, and she moved into the trailer when her house burned down, and the zoning board said that does not count as a temporary residence. You need to apply for that. So she applied for that, for the temporary residence to stay in her RV, and they turned her down. Now, get this. She's making the headlines because her house burned down. They aren't letting it happen. There are other people who have RVs in her property in the same zoning board who have people who stay in those RVs that are not in trouble with the zoning board. She just is the one that got ratted out, and so she's in trouble. In fact, one of the guys acknowledged here who's on the zoning board, he says, you got to be fair. If you're going to do something, do it for everybody. And it is a small town, which in some ways are good, but in other ways we've got to our own town councils, our zoning boards. They have to quit favoritism and they have to stop taking rumor. They need to find fact. Chuck DeWitt says the zoning board says it's unlikely the variance will be granted, but we'll know for sure at an October 11th meeting. Obviously, there's a little bit of outrage on this, even from non-libertarian folks that are like, come on now, when your house burns down and you have an RV on your property, that's probably the ideal time to apply a temporary zoning permit. Now, I don't know whatever is going behind this. From what I understand, there's people's families are involved and her neighbors kind of ratted on her. And I guess the neighbors are like, there's kind of their family too. When there's a quarrel, it's a small town. But that's, there is, and I'm also going to link this in the chat, but like I said, it's in the description. There is an event to show up to for all our listeners in Indiana. It's also Facebook attendable. So if you'd like to attend via Facebook, you can also do that. I'm going to link that in the chat, but do either of you have any idea what's going on there? Why would this happen? This just seems cruel.
Are they trying to build a parking lot and green space to be able to entice Sorry, I'm going with Spike in the convalescence home that he just went and spoke about. So it's the same stuff. I'm not going to use profane language on Chris's show. It's the same stuff that we see. It's just somebody's got to burr up their keister. And just famously, the zoning board's like, well, yeah, that's against the law. And
it's no bureaucracy. I mean, if you want to, one thing I was thinking about the other day, we were talking about science fiction and fantasy and novels and reading and everything else. And it struck me that, or it's something I've known for a long time, but it just hit me during that moment that you learn a lot about life by reading those books, right? You know, even though it's just a story. But a great example is the view of bureaucracy. If you read Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, you learn how stupid, mindless, and annoying bureaucracy is. And he does a very good job of painting it, a very, very big, broad picture of it. But that's what you get. You get into people who are just doing a functional job, and they don't, it becomes less about trying to help people, less about trying to solve problems, and more about, well, here's the paper, we got to do the paper, we got to get that filled out, here's a form, it's got to be filled out this way. And everybody deals with this stuff all the time, right? But government is notoriously bad at it, even worse, because if private industry were to invoke this kind of bureaucracy that we see with government, they'd be out of business. There's no one would want to deal with it anymore. And somebody would start do a startup. I mean, you get this with these larger companies that do this stuff. And then you get a startup that comes along and they do a better job, a better service. Well, people start to go to them, right? And that'll cause the larger companies to go, hey, we need to do something better here. And it keeps them in line. When you have government, you have no competition. You have no incentive. You have no reason to make that experience in any way enjoyable or acceptable. Right. You just do what you want to do at that point. And a lot of people don't even know why it's like, why do I have to fill out this form to fill out this form to get approval on this form to get this form? That's just the way it always is. It's the way it's been. Well, who decided this? Who thought it up? I don't know. Some guy 20 years ago. I mean, it's like nobody even knows why they're doing it, you know, and what the function of it is. It's just the way it's been done.
Mm-hmm. Beware of the leopard. That's all you got to say. I mean, that's government in a nutshell. Come on.
But you found the notice.
Yeah.
Yes, it was in a disused lavatory at the bottom of the stairs saying, yep, that's a great line. So.
Yeah. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's a good one. It's actually my brother's favorite book of all time. And it's a good one. All right. I got a story here. Now, a lot of these stories are anonymous. Some of them I do have names for. This one I have a name for. My friend Randy. Bipolar type 1. I was trying to manage a manic episode. My family's worried and called police. I'm sure you're already shaking your head right now. Police entered my house against my will. Someone else left it unlocked on their way out. I told them I was fine. I was not threatening anyone or suicide. They did exactly what cops do. They threw me in the ground. They handcuffed me. I resisted, but I didn't attack them or try anything. I was just naturally trying to avoid their attempts. And when they first tried to walk me outside the front door, they actually pushed me. I didn't take that voluntary step outside the door frame. I face planted on concrete and caused my jaw, because my top and bottom teeth hit so hard. Most of my teeth broke and I needed many caps and root canals. They broke my jaw in two places and six of my teeth in order to save me from myself. And of course, they put him in the hospital. He went into like a 72-hour involuntary hold. He even tried to decline the stitches and everything to get it sewed up. And of course, he ended up having to pay for most of this, most of his dental work himself to get long-term repairs. You know, they would stop him from profusely bleeding, but they weren't going to do anything to fix him cosmetically. This is kind of the nature of what happens when you call the police. And it's like, you do want to do a wellness check on somebody, but these days it feels like a wellness check is almost like swatting someone. I mean, it's like, I don't know what's going to happen when I do this wellness check. I mean, how many stories of this do we have to read where it's, I called because I was worried about my neighbor, you know, she didn't seem like she was eating, or, you know, her dogs were locked in the house. I wanted to make sure she was conscious or whatever it is. And then they end up shooting dogs, people, police, or, you know, in this case, not somebody shot. And so it doesn't make national news, but badly injuring somebody. Anybody thoughts on this one?
Oh, you see it all the time. I mean, yeah. Kelly Thomas, the gentleman who was having an episode in the middle of the street and was hurting nobody, but he was having an episode and they went in and they ended up killing him. I mean, it's the police. Calling the police is a bad idea for a lot of these situations because they're going out to try to defuse, but also are consciously always trying to protect themselves and assuming the worst. If you get somebody out there who is trained in the situation that is, you know, being called about, you would have a much better result because they know how to de-escalate. They know how to get the person who's having an issue stabilized and come down and that sort of thing. You don't have to, you know, tackle them and everything else, right? So that's one of the things when they talk about defunding the police, that's what they're talking about is getting the right people going out and responding to some of these things, as opposed to sending men with guns who are in the mindset of, you know, stop it, protect yourself. That's it. You know, it's a very different mindset that they have when they go out to any kind of call because they have no idea what they're getting into.
Neutralize threats as opposed to
they go out for worst case scenario. I agree with you. I don't agree with the whole idea of defund. I always thought refund the police is a probably better tagline, but
here's the problem.
Yeah.
The idea behind defund the police is good. The left is terrible at marketing their ideas. Right?
Like the representative who said defund the police and I'll protect myself.
I mean, you've got defund the police, you've got white privilege, you've got all these things that were the concept behind it is sound and good and something we should be doing and talking about. But the naming of it is so bad that nobody even gets to that point because they hear the name and they immediately just block out and go off on a tangent and have their own reasons for being opposed to it. It's the most unfortunate. It's one of the most unfortunate things because they're just giving their opposition ammunition to use against them.
But it's like the tagline. Imagine the tagline: "Peds for children." Now you're thinking pedophiles, but it could have been pediatricians. Okay, I'm sorry that you picked a terrible tagline. But maybe if someone points out to you, "Hey, this is a terrible tagline," and I think shout out to Vaughn on this one to say, you know, every place needs to have that 20-year-old. Who's not affiliated with the organization to say, we're going to do this. Does this connotate anything terrible? Yeah, Peds for Kids is probably not the best tagline you want to use. So
I might not be a marketing expert, but yeah.
may not be the best one. But yeah, getting back to it, yeah, the police are going in to try to take care of psychological issues, and I've dealt with this personally again. I remember an officer coming into our house because our son was having an episode and we described what he was going through. And he looked at me and said, "Is that like ADHD?" And it stuck with me for all these years. I said, "Yeah, I will never call you again because you have no clue what's going on." It is getting better. I will tell you that there are crisis lines now. The problem is that there are a lot of people who call the crisis lines simply for attention. You know, I'm going to kill myself. And, you know, it's like, "Hey, Fred, you called again to the 13th time today. Thanks a lot. You get the frequent caller, you know, sticker for the day." There's a lot of messed up people in this world. The problem is government, of course, wants to have everybody fit into this form that they can fill out and just be able to file that so they can just go on to the next form that they have to fill out and file away. And of course, in some cases, it could be you don't know if you're walking in. And I legitimately sympathize with the police with this. You don't know if you're walking with somebody who's having a temper tantrum or is hearing voices that say, "Take everybody with you when you go." So it's kind of a balance point here. And it's unfortunate. Obviously, I don't want to see what happened to your friend, Hody, happen. That's horrendous. And we need to have better training for them to be able to pick that up and realize someone says, "I'm not a danger to myself," and can say that out loud. It's probably a good point to go, you know what, let's find out what's going on here, as opposed to, you know, handcuffing him and throwing him down on the ground. So,
yeah, you bring a good point that it's like the squeaky wheel gets the oil, but isn't it the guy who only calls the suicide hotline once that you've got to, like, I mean, everybody, we want to take all the calls seriously, but obviously yeah. when it's like somebody who is always positive, you know, and I think, you know, when I went through my dark days, I think that's how my family knew it was serious, because I was, you know, I spent 99% of my life being happy hody. And so when it went through this, it was like, oh, we know it's serious, because yeah. that's what's going on. When you have somebody that is kind of a red flag every day kind of person, you're like, right, this is how you live. This is your average day. And it's hard. I mean, the police, even in I think an ideal society, the police aren't, that's not their job to kind of deal with that, like to determine which cases need what kind of care. I mean, this is a mental health issue. Yeah. All right. Another one here. And this one's an anonymous one. They raided my house based on the word of an unverified, unidentified confidential informant. That's a quote. They're looking for guns and crack, of which there was neither in the house, but several of my roommates had weed paraphernalia, and one that had problem with banks kept his cash in a safe in his room where he also had meth. This really solidified the conviction they already had, so they smashed holes in the wall, tore down the ceiling in several parts of the house, pulled up the carpets in some room, screamed, "Where are the guns?" in the face of one of my female roommates for 10 minutes straight, etc. They took all of the electronics and cash in the house. I wasn't home when it happened, so after I was literally the only one of seven of us, it was a big three-story house that still had a phone. They never returned any of it, which included my laptop. They did so much damage to the place that the landlord said we all had to be out in 10 days. I had a cat and had nowhere for my cat to go, so I had to put my stuff that wasn't ruined, but they did break a number of my household goods, ripped open furniture, smashed dishes and cabinets, etc., in storage pods, and move into a motel that accepted Petch, which quickly ate my meager savings and then my tax return. This was in 2015. I'm still not financially recovered from it, and there are still items not replaced. It happens very rarely, but if you ever see, like, if you ever get the opportunity to see, like, I don't know, usually it's not leaked, but it's they have to release it because some incident happened because of it, like, of a raid. It is the most traumatic, like, one of the most wild things. I looked at this because of the people who killed Breonna Taylor. They had a video of a raid they had conducted earlier. And I was like, well, I want to, you know, let's go ahead and see the one where their body cameras were actually on, and see how it worked. And I remember they yelled the F word something like four times before they identified themselves as police. And I mean, it was they actually like jiggled the handle. There was no knock, no doorbell. They jiggled the handle to make sure it was locked. The guy gave the symbol. Signal. They smashed the door with their, you know, with their battering ram. They threw gas in there. They start yelling and screaming and swearing and then announce that they're police. And I'm just like, that is the most like, and obviously this puts themselves in danger as well. Cause I mean, any normal person is going to be like, there's some invader breaking into the front of my house. And then, I mean, afterwards and just, I mean, kids screaming that they're tossing to the side and the destruction on the personal property is, it seems like it's more commonplace than it should be in like a police raid. I mean, these things obviously are there's no going to be no successful in a police raid because you're on somebody else's turf and property and it's always going to look somewhat chaotic, but it just is one of those where you just kind of identify like 12 different steps. Even me as a pedestrian that kind of says this could have been handled in a different way. I mean, even what would be so bad with just showing up with a warrant, just being like, hey, we heard there's some drugs. We have a warrant. We're going to search your home now. But that's just not the way these raids work.
They're not incentivized to work that way. You know, four guys going in. I mean, if they're, again, this gets right back to if they think it's going to be worst case scenario, they're going to do worst case scenario. I just had a conversation with my son actually yesterday. He says, why do you always plan for the worst? And I'm like, I'm not kind of planning like it's going to happen. I'm going to just want at least to know if something terrible happens, what are my options, as opposed to being in the situation and scratching my head on what I've done differently. and it's ridiculous that we're doing this over, you know, just some random informant type of thing, which of course the undercover informant should not be the basis of a anonymous undercover informant should not be the basis of a search warrant. I legitimately don't know why police departments aren't being held when there's anonymous informants that go in and there's no repercussions other than, well, this is going in your file. And when you quit and go to another police department, that's not going to follow. But yeah, it's just getting ridiculous. But then, of course, we have to fill out this piece of paper. This is the process we have to follow. We have to do this because of the one time that we saw that somebody got critically injured when we thought there were kids in there. I will tell you, I don't think most police officers that I know of personally, and I know a couple of them, want to do those raids. Of course, there are bad apples that want to do those things and are looking for kind of a fight. But unfortunately, those, you know, they get all the attention, and it brought up the memory of the house that they raided down in Georgia, where they fired a flashbang into a toddler crib because they just fired a flashbang in there and the kid got critically injured. Now they had the police department had to pay, but wait a minute, let me rephrase that. Let me dial that back. The people of that city had to pay, not the police department, for that.
Right.
And it was $3.5 million. So, you know, it's just absolutely ridiculous that there are no consequences for that. And of course, there'd be consequences for us as well if we started shooting back because somebody came barreling into our house. Mm-hmm. It's tough to say that, you know, don't do bad things, but just as we were talking about earlier, people are profiled for, well, we think they're going to do bad things. The minute we stop policing personal behavior that's not injurious to others, unless they choose to do so, we stop doing that. The police are going to get a lot less busy. They're going to have a lot more time to be able to prosecute those, you know, crimes that do happen.
Yep.
That they don't have to sit there and look good. And the last thing I always think that should be, I would love to see a nationwide media boycott of when politicians go on television, except to announce like something big. I would love to stop seeing them broadcast, you know, when they pull over a family and arrest the dad because he had $20 and an ounce of marijuana hidden underneath the driver's seat. I keep looking at it, and I'm so glad to watch social media just light into these police departments when they sit there and they're all like puffed up and proud. Oh, I'm in my full SWAT gear. Look here. And it's like got like a pistol that looks like it hasn't been cleaned in about three decades, $50. And then like you have to go, where's the drugs? Oh, right there on top. And they've got it sitting on like a big pedestal. It's going, oh, I'm glad. Yeah, we're safe from that now.
Yeah, they pose for like a successful hunting trip. Sorry, yeah, big tough guys. Reinhold, anything you want to add?
Just that we need to stop sending these police. If we just get rid of the laws, they won't have the incentive to go and do that stuff, right? They're just you know, doing their job, but it's money for them too. I mean, you don't.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, pulling people over because they have a seatbelt on, right? I mean, that's just money they get to put in their pocket to go pay and do other things and pay for their ammo and pay for their, you know, sitting in their car and trying to figure out how they can cheat on their wives and that sort of thing. So it's
I mean, it's going in hard.
Get away with that.
Sorry,
one.
That's like that's it. A story I know from.
Oh, we've had it too. Dennis? We've had it out here as well. That's the scary thing. It's in every single county has that cop that was doing that.
No, it's I've been told it's all cops, but that's from somebody.
I don't agree with that. Somebody
I know very well who has been hit on a lot by a lot of cops. Let's put it that way.
But like, I mean, they even did that, like what, like thing into the Patriot Act, and it'd been used to spy more on like ex-wives than it had on terrorists or something. Like there were more like subpoenas for, yeah, because I just wanted to see like what my ex-wife was up to than there was like legitimate terrorist threats. I mean, stuff you think passes for a good reason does not get used for good reasons when you apply it this way. We have a friend, Joe Patchkill, This year, I decided to run for office for Virginia House of Delegates as a Libertarian. Both the GOP and Democrats decided they didn't want a primary, but opted for a convention, the same way the Libertarians do it every year. By doing this, they didn't have to get the normal signature requirements. The Libertarians still did. And then they tried to keep us off the ballot because they needed, quote, more information about the party, unquote. Running as a Libertarian is a nightmare. I have worked on Republican campaigns before, back in my dark days, and I have worked on Libertarian campaigns. And I can tell you this, that the stuff that the entire Libertarian campaign is focused on is not even a full day with the Republican experience. I mean, we are talking, you don't even have to, you just say, talk to this judge. They'll say that getting your signatures is useless. If for whatever reason they do, just give them the donor list or something. Like, I mean, there is somebody who you can talk to that says, and this is stuff that you spend weeks, sometimes an entire campaign on, like as a Libertarian candidate doing. And I'm just telling you that the 5 month experience for like a Libertarian campaign is not even an hour as a Republican. Like, it is just, the experience is so luxurious. It's unbelievable. If you do run as a GOP member, I mean, and to get to squash somebody else, it's just, oh yeah, talk to this judge and they'll challenge each and every signature and go line by line. Of course, as a Republican, we'd not have to do that. That was just considered a waste of time. If for some reason some judge would have tried, we would have gotten a different judge. We would have had that judge fired. I mean, it was so simple. It was really like, I took it for granted because I just assumed it was how politics worked. And I guess it was how politics works, but it's only how politics works if you're a Republican or a Democrat. It is not how politics works as a Libertarian. And having worked on the Libertarian campaigns, I mean, it's so frustrating. I think that I can't even work on the campaigns anymore. I've kind of put that to the side because it is, and I would say like part of it is just because I don't really enjoy the political process. But the other part is I just trying to make progress when the playing field is this unbalanced. It's like playing a sport and being like, well, I like football, but I'm giving the other team, you know, an 8 touchdown lead first and go. Begin the game. And you're just like, well, this is dumb. Like, why am I playing this? It is. And I mean, it's designed to break your back and break your will. And I guess I'm the one of the ones whose wills it broke. So joke's on me, but I couldn't take it. It is so frustrating.
Yeah. And it's the same with Democrats in like Chicago and big cities like that, where they get 90. It's kind of funny to me because I always love looking at the district results that come in some of the like South Chicago districts and wide swath of different neighborhoods where it's like 93% of the people voted for the Democratic candidates. And I'm like, that seems awfully high, but it's the reality because it gets back to the whole Chicago machine. Or out here in flyover country, if you're a Democrat, you know, you've got probably a chance in hell. But yeah, electoral reform is a big thing, but of course, nobody wants to talk about it, especially in the age of Trump and challenging every single ballot cast. Or if, you know, somebody sneezed on a ballot, does that make it invalid? You know, there's so many different things we should be doing with our election system that you know, as Dennis and Chris have said painfully over and over again, that it's very hard to steal an election. Now, on the local side, you can do lots of things to make it really difficult, but there's a lot, it's very difficult to, quote, you know, manufacture votes and go full like Gaddafi and win 99.999% of the vote. And that 1/1000th of a percent is going to be shot after my election celebration. So,
you know, we saw an example of that where they were sure that there was some sort of malfeasance in Maricopa County, Arizona, and apparently there wasn't. So stealing the election, that kind of,
yeah. No, I agree with you, there's no malfeasance. It's just that now they're, of course, they're questioning the auditors, so we need to audit the auditors.
Yeah. Yeah, they had the ones they handpicked that were cronies for them that were Republican. Now they're the ones that are the problem, right?
We need to audit the auditors who are auditing the auditing. There we go.
It's funny. It feels so. It feels so long ago since we talked about Venezuela, but like the whole Maduro election and like every other country's like, nope, that didn't really happen. But here we are. Anyway, yeah. I guess there's some things we take for granted as Americans. All right. Well,
I know in Indiana, I'll just say real quick. In Indiana, though, we do have, at least they have a they had some stuff in place that the libertarians met, so that I know when Chris was running the party and I was running for office, I didn't have to get signatures because we had automatic ballot access because we had gotten a certain percentage in this Secretary of State race, which gave us, you know, that sort of thing. And that sort of stuff is the kind of thing we have to weave our way through. We don't get automatic ballot like the Republicans and Democrats do, but the, you know, we may not win elections as libertarians, but the more we can get the percentages on those elections, we get 2%, 3%. You start being in charge of swings between Republicans and Democrats and who wins. And you start proving that you have a little bit enough power that they have to start respecting you and putting you on and giving you that. Right. So that's the best way to fight it. Right now we do it through lawsuits and a lot of money being spent on it. And we have to go to the courts all the time. But really, it's just that everybody getting tired of the Republicans and the Democrats going out and voting for a third party, giving them enough power that they can at least make a difference in that election. That's how you make a change without actually winning. You can still control things that way.
Yeah, you might not get your politician elected, but you'll get your issues discussed. And libertarians have had some success on issues, you know, at least in the political realm, much more than we have getting our politicians in place.
Now, if we could just stop worrying about baking the cake and stupid stuff like that,
oh my gosh.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. So I should, yeah. Why it's important for libertarians to talk about issues that matter. All right. Another anonymous story, government interference and making my life difficult. For 8 years, I did not pay taxes. Yeah, I think I see where this is going. All right. This was because that one, it is immoral to tax the fruits of my labor. And two, tax revenues used for immoral purposes, including waging wars, something I had personal experience with. Over the years, I was gently nudged and then not so gently. Finally, it was made clear to me that unless I paid up, I'd forfeit all my assets and quite possibly be imprisoned. I pleaded my case, but it was clear I was up against an entity with unlimited resources and absolutely no empathy. I finally relented under protest. It cost me dearly. What I learned is that unless one is willing to give up everything, and I mean everything, there is almost no way to fight the IRS and its immoral system of direct taxation. Yeah.
Yeah. Shit about that. Well, yeah. He can't. He's dead now.
Yeah. Let's ask Al Sharpton about it, and let's ask a number of others who are in politics who haven't paid their taxes, but somehow suddenly can get away with it and aren't in jail. Yeah, us plebs are expected to pay unto Caesar, but the $600 latest requirement for the reporting, I would like to make a plea to all of humanity. Go ahead, let them do it. Let's tie up tax court for the rest of eternity. Let's go ahead and put together what you have to do. We'll play their game. Okay, show up at court. I don't have an attorney. I need to get one. So I need 90 days to be able to figure that out and just tie it up for everybody. And it's the same thing with like the bail system and things like that, or with the plea bargains. They can't hear every case. They're doing it for their convenience, not yours. So if everybody demanded a jury trial, justice would swing to a complete and quick halt. So those are the things that's like, if you're going to do this, guess what? We as a country, we're gonna toe the line, we're gonna appeal, we're gonna do everything. You might rubber stamp, but boy, you're gonna start missing deadlines. And if you start missing deadlines, people can't do stuff. So if they're gonna do this, let's fight back by just using their own tactics. Make life miserable for Fed.
Civil disobedience. Love it. I think if you contact Cato, I believe they'll actually they'll offer to like pay some of your legal fees if you choose to do this. But so if you want to go into it knowing that you could get in some legal trouble, there's at least one resource to try and contact for. Mm-hmm. Sorry, go ahead, Reinhold.
I'll say alternatively, what we're going to see is a lot of people who do who are involved in 1099 transactions are going to be selling their services for $5.99.
What a bargain.
So. Suddenly my paychecks for my, because, writing and they pay me via PayPal. Suddenly I'm going to get three different transactions for this. I mean, it's
goofy stuff. Instead of paying monthly, you're just going to pay weekly or daily or whatever the hell it is that you want to work out.
I mean, and if people like us can figure out how to criminally do this, you know that there's criminal masterminds that figured this out the instant it was announced. They're like, oh, okay, so just break it up smaller then.
Yeah. All right. And I'm sure they'll probably put reporting functions in there, like with right now when you deposit more than $10,000 or $10,000, if you deposit $9,999.99 27 times in a row, the feds come in and say, wait a minute, you're structuring your deposits.
Right.
So I'm sure they're probably going to do something stupid like that. So, and where'd they come up with 600? 600 is such like a weird arbitrary number. It's like, that's like everybody's rent. Or everybody want to be like,
I just want to make sure it's less than what people spend at Burger King.
$600 what they got on the stimulus? Doesn't everybody get $600?
Could be it. That little crumb they threw us out of the trillions. When you sit there and do the math on the trillions and going, you could have just gave that money to pretty much everybody, and would have been, would have been far more helpful for the economy. Well, no, it wouldn't have, but you know what I mean? As opposed to it going to corporations and governments and things like that. So, it would have been 500 inflation happened. No, it would have been 50, but inflation happened. So congratulates everybody for taking a 20% pay cut this year. You're welcome.
Right. All right, I got a friend here named Gunther. The government instituting COVID restrictions made my heart surgery get canceled, and now that they are able to do them, I can't get the surgery because I don't have the vaccine. The hospital says I must have the vaccine, and my heart surgeon says I should wait till after I'm healed from my surgery to get the vaccine because the potential side effects are much more likely to kill me if I get them, and I should be more likely to have a side effect due to my heart condition. Yeah. So like, I think one of the most striking things about some of the COVID regulations is how they specifically have gone with no exceptions. Because most of the time when you put forth like something as libertarians, it's difficult for me to argue with some certain regulations because they're like, oh no, there's an exception for that. There's an exception for that. Whereas I'll have somebody here who it's like, no, I will like, I'll flare up and die if I get it. And they're like, well, I guess you're out of a job. I guess like we're just, no exceptions on this one. And this is kind of the first time I've seen that. Like most of the time it's very like, apply this way. It's difficult to get an exception under a lot of government regulations. But this is the first time that I've kind of seen like, nah, we're just not taking them. If it'll kill you, I don't care. Like it's over with. And of course, in this case, this is messing with somebody's surgery that he's caught in a catch-22 where it's like, I get it. I have a flare up, then I'll actually need to be in the hospital. And then, or if I try to get the surgery first, oh, I can't get the surgery first because I need this. I mean, he's got a chicken and egg argument, and it's there's not a lot of people. I understand. Like I'm not trying to go full anti-vax here. This is always the accusation you get when you put up stories like this. I'm aware this is not most people. Like of my 5,000 friends that I have, I know of like three of them that actually have like a pre-existing condition or something that's like, no, my doctor even recommends that I do not get the vaccine. I have a doctor's excuse, but I'm fired from my job anyway, because I have to have it.
I think. Go ahead, Reno.
I think people know how I feel about the vaccine. At least some people do. It irritates me the most is that this is, again, you're politicizing a decision that should be between you and your doctor. If your doctor recommends that you get it, you should take his advice and get it. If the doctor recommends that you don't, then don't. I mean, I don't know why this has to be so hard. When you start politicizing it, people start trying to make the decision on whether they should get it or not based off of their politics, which is the most asinine thing I've ever heard of in my life. This is your health. This is the health of your friends and family and people who you live near. It is a communicable disease. Talk to the doctor. The doctor gives you a recommendation. you should probably listen to them and make that decision based off of that and that alone, not whether or not Donald Trump or Joe Biden tells you to. That's just my little rant though.
Yeah. Brian.
The funny thing is that, Hody, you know, three people, I have no social life, and I know of two people who have been actively told by their doctors, do not get the freaking vaccine because in their opinion and the opinion of also people in their profession, it is a much higher risk to get the vaccine because of the complications for cardiac or other reasons. And yes, those people, and for, I know one of them got COVID. He's recovering, thank goodness. But I'm sitting here scratching my head going, why waste this vaccine thing? If you've known somebody's had COVID, they've got antibodies. There's no study out there that says conclusively that having the vaccine is infinitely better than having COVID and the antibodies you get from COVID. There's conflicting studies at this point. And the third thing is that there's no exemptions, period. These are some really ridiculous policies that are, of course, being driven to the least common denominator. We have a form to fill out. We've got to have this form filled out. And there's that checkbox isn't on this form. I'm sorry, we can't help you. As I said, COVID's been the fantastic thing for libertarians, because if you were worried about government intrusion into schools, your lives, your jobs, healthcare, everything else, congratulations, it's all been delivered on a plate for you to be able to deliver a libertarian message. And I still scratch my head on this, why bureaucrats, these hospital bureaucrats, are opening themselves up to huge, I don't think the government's going to back them up when they, all these lawsuits that are coming from the fired employees, the people who are denied care, the people who were denied jobs, insurance, etc., because they were told that they had to take a risk that their doctor has clearly stated and written down you cannot take. So I'm looking forward to the lawsuits that are going to come out of this, because it's going to be such an epic bitch slap from the Supreme Court when they get it, because it's an insane invasion of privacy. Now, please let me caveat. I think that if you have not had COVID, I think you should get the shot. I think it's been proven reasonably effective. I think there are concerns for some age groups and some, you know, people. Please consult with your doctor before you do it. This is not medical advice or financial advice. Don't buy Bitcoin. Thank you.
Well, I think you're misguided in thinking that the Supreme Court's going to knock any of this down.
I think they
because
will.
There's precedent. There's precedents there, and they're going to follow that precedent because that's what the Supreme Court does.
I
very rarely overturn precedent.
But I think they will in this case. And we'll see what happens. I'm willing to wager an entire penny on it, Dennis.
Ooh. All right. The one penny bet.
Oh, no. Wait. No. I got to do this right. Okay, Dennis. Okay. I have it right here. I have a shiny $2 bill. Fresh, right? For I printed it this morning, and we'll put that on for when that. And if I win, you will send me one, and if I lose, I will send this to your house.
Deal? I do not bet for $2 bills. $2 bills are sacred in my family. So,
well, that's where I got it from. It's from, yeah.
We'll figure out something. We'll get the details of this ironed out.
I'll give you a quick history on that. My father had a $2 bill that his mom gave him. He needed something, so he gave it back to his mom to get something that he wanted. And then he wrecked his car. And then he got the $2 bill back, put it in his wallet, and it stayed in that wallet until a couple weeks ago when my mother cleaned it out after his passing. So $2 bills don't go anywhere in his family. Sorry. Right.
I'm willing to transport my luck to you, Dennis. There you go. It's right there. I'll send it to you. You can build your own story. That stupid idiot that I complain about all the time, he's willing to send me a $2 bill on a Supreme Court bill.
All right. Sasha Cohen, he is actually one of the few, he's locally elected libertarians throughout the country and one of my friends. My city is trying to establish a citizen police review board. So it sounds good, right? Here's the problem. The board will have no power to do anything except, do anything past give a chief recommendation which the police department and the officer in question can freely ignore. They require the victim to be named publicly and do all the hearings in public with no exceptions. They could realistically force a person who was raped by an officer to publicly talk about it in full detail just to get a powerless board to recommend discipline based. And then based on the threat from the local police union, they're actually amending this ordinance so that the officer can just not show up. Doesn't have to show up to these meetings or anything like that. And he was talking with me about how, like, this is the problem with when you get something that looks like a good bill that a lot of times, like, politicians or police unions or whatever get on back and they're like, hey, we wanted to fix it. We wanted to change it, or actually disguised a lot like this. And he was talking about how, like, this is actually, like, this is good for them because what they're going is from a process which they can't, what they can't ignore the justice, even though they rarely, you know, have to face the music anyway. But at least in that system, they have to do it. Whereas now they're offering this reform where they can just completely ignore all the consequences. They don't have to own up to any of the music. And that this is kind of what it looks like when the police union is like, oh yeah, we're good with this kind of reform. He's like, that's when you really want to start getting into it, because something happened. Anybody thoughts there?
Yeah, no. First of all, I'm going to give a shout to Sasha for I used to live in DeKalb, so go Huskies. Yeah, and I'm glad he's serving the government there. Makes me want to go back, but anyhow, yeah. Anytime a government agency says, "Yeah, this is a great idea, we should do this," you should run, or at least dig into it much further, and find out that only the people that can serve would be retired employees that have had X amount of years experience, plus also only eat donuts on Thursdays at this certain cafe. You know, it, just the stupid requirements that we put into some of these laws that, well, we don't, our politicians do. But yeah, I mean, the government doesn't want to be questioned, doesn't want that, because that could cost someone their job, their livelihood, their pension, things like that. All sorts of those things that we have to deal with on a daily basis. You know, I could say something here that my company may interpret as terrible and I could get fired tomorrow. Okay. There's a bit of self-censoring that goes on, but not a lot. But in government, it's kind of they don't want to take that risk at all. And so they put this to make sure that it doesn't happen. So.
I know.
And well, part of the problem is that the majority of people want the police to be the police and be strong and protect them. And they don't see, they back the blue. They don't see where it's possible that they could be doing these bad things. You have your occasional incidents or one bad guy, or, you know, that sort of thing, but they don't see that it's a systemic problem. Therefore they don't ever get a resolution that's going to fix it, the systemic problems. And it may be a case where a government review board that it's implemented by laws and then obviously political at that point, you introduce politics into it, is never going to work. It's got to be a non-government organization that watches and monitors the police, brings lawsuits when they're due, collects evidence, finds, you know, we unfortunately have to go that route because the police aren't going to police themselves. The government's not going to police itself. Right. The government's not going to limit its own power, because why would it? There's no incentive. So these things aren't going to be fixed unless it is politically untenable to do so. And the only way it's going to be that is to keep shining the light on the problems. And thankfully, with the what we have with cell phones and cameras, and things are starting to get recorded, and we're starting to hear more and more of the stuff that's always going on, we just didn't have any evidence of. We're getting more and more of that. And that's why the police departments are fighting back so hard on saying, you can't film me. And it's like, no, we're paying your salary. We can film you anytime we want to. That's the rules. And you need to learn those rules. So I think we're seeing progress. I think it's going to help with the technology. We're going to get there and try to get some changes made. But it's still a lot of pushback on this because of just the political mindset of some people who who see the police as being the only line keeping them from being overrun and killed. You know?
And mathematically, you're more likely to die from COVID than be in a SWAT raid. So I love how the media, and I mean, there's serious concerns here. Please don't take this the wrong way. There are serious concerns about police overreach and stuff like that. But we were all, this was top of story stuff. And for the rest of us plebes, it's never going to affect us until we're that someone else that you're talking about, Hody, earlier in the podcast. It's the best prescription against this is just communication and being able to talk to your neighbors, your friends, things like that. A lot of these problems that are there can hopefully be kind of worked through, I want to say, in just being more attentive and being not afraid to talk about items, being not able to talk about changing the way police interact with the public, changing the way that healthcare interacts with the government. There's a lot of people out there that want to see things change, but think it can't change because it's just too big, too ridiculous. So we just need to finally, you know, start talking to people about this, and attend those stupid meetings, show up to a board meeting, show up to those things to make them accountable in the end. I'm guilty of not doing it as much as I should. I think we all are because we all have lives and they always schedule these meetings. At 11:37 to 11:45 is the time for public comment. And that's the only time you'll be allowed inside. Oh, I have 8 minutes with 20 other people. And the first guy is going to be some guy who's going to complain about the color of the park benches on there. I think they should be more burnt orange than the current light orange that currently are. Let me tell you why. My father. So that's the thing. And even the groups that we may most, disagree with, I won't say detest, but disagree with the police themselves and things like that, I think there's far more to be found in having a conversation, at least, as opposed to getting sucked behind slogans and flags and stuff like that. There are some people you can't talk to, but there are a lot more that you can. So this year has been, as I said, great for COVID on gun control and everything else. When things went south in the early days of COVID, lots of people that were really against gun controls or really for gun control suddenly were far more interested in owning a firearm. So,
yeah, it goes back to what Reinhold said earlier. That is your messaging actually functional? Like, you can say what you want, free country, about the way policing works, but are you more likely to get what you want by shouting ACAB or by addressing some issues and making some progress there?
And by the way, that bad marketing that the left has is far worse in the libertarian circles.
Yeah. My God. Yes.
Decentralized anything. I love decentralization, but sometimes when you can't find that one message that unifies people, then you get a bunch of messages and the ones that get famous aren't the ones that you want out and about.
Yeah, just please, we can stop getting the edgelords in there for their 15 seconds of fame to be able to put up a tweet that gets talked about on Mar or something like that for the stupidest frigging things.
Please don't wear the Star of David for COVID restrictions, please.
No, it's a great example. I mean, I don't. I remember when I was following the presidential election. I can't remember what year it was. It was Badnarik was running, and the press that he got the whole year was he did an interview and he said he didn't have a driver's license because he didn't think the state, you know, had the authority to make him have a driver's license. And he was mocked and ridiculed in the press, and that was the only thing that ever came out of that campaign that anybody ever heard. So now that's what the liberty movement is tagged with, those sorts of things. When you become, you know, when the loudest things that you're talking about are things that most people find ridiculous, you're going to be seen as ridiculous.
Right.
And you're tagging everybody else who has that.
It's not fair because, I mean, this is one of those where it's like they blow up 7 children, 3 adults that are aid workers overseas, and they don't have to say a damn thing about it. Whereas, you know, we have a bad tweet from a state affiliate that got control of the Twitter account. You know what I mean? But unfortunately, that's the way it is. It's that's the way it is. And that's one of these things, like, this is how you get, when you talk about guys, and one of the things that I love about Martin Luther King Jr. was that he spent so much time talking about how to protest and not just what to protest, because he was so good at saying, like, this is going to turn people off that are potentially allies. And people can yell all day, well, technically this is right. Technically, he's like, okay, but I'm not here to win technicalities. I'm here to win a revolution. Right. And so, like, I understand, like, if people know that this is not, like, there are always going to be people that detract from you or people that preach violence, for example. But if you do your best to distance yourself from them, you can kind of give yourself an advantage. All right, let's press on. I got two more stories here, and I do not want this show to hit 2 hours because you all have been so excellently patient. Not that this hasn't been fascinating, but I just think that this is two hours a lot to dedicate to one program. I get it. We'll get
it. Des and I have almost agreed on everything except for a pending Supreme Court decision.
Right.
So, but there's buy a lottery ticket, folks.
Yeah, it's pretty good. My mother worked with a guy who's dealing with parental alienation. They talked often because my mother had seen it firsthand, my divorce. So she always tried to give him advice and encouragement. His ex would keep taking him to court for more and more money, which was financially ruining him. On the flip side, though, she kept his kids from him and never let him see them. The courts did nothing about the visitation, of course, because they rarely ever do. From time to time, she would call him and be super friendly and nice, tell him the kids really miss him, and she's sorry for not letting them see him more. She'd invite him to come pick his kids up for a visit, excited to see his children for the first time in years. He'd rush over there. When he arrived, however, her brothers would be waiting, and they would beat the crap out of him. He ended up in the hospital a couple times. The police did nothing. It was on her property, and they'd claim harassment and threats, and so it was all just self-defense. Eventually, he couldn't take it anymore. He'd become a wage slave for his ex to support children that she was teaching to hate him. Her use of the system to continually grind him into something less than dust became too much. He eventually killed himself. Yeah. I don't have, obviously, this drastic inexperience, but I can verify that, like, if somebody's not paying child support, they're not going to do anything. I mean, in fact, like, we've had incidences with our kids and, you know, with the ex where it's like, hey, he's not picking them up or he's not relinquishing them or something. It's like, well, we can confirm there's not any danger. So we're just, you know, that you have to file something, like, and then that takes months. So, I mean, you can just blatantly ignore, you know, a court order for, I mean, 6 months without the police ever, like, knocking on your door and doing anything. And then finally, when it comes to that point, if the police actually do get involved, it's like, oh, does your thing say this? Yes. Okay. Well, we're going to take the kids and do it, but no punishment, nothing that stops them from doing it again. I actually didn't know that you could renegotiate, like, with force, the initial, like, custody payments, custody
support orders. Yep.
Yeah.
They're malleable.
And so if you make more money, they just reapply and they're like, I believe this person's making more money now, and so I'm going to get more money. I actually didn't know that. I thought that once you signed it, it was done. And we actually just went through that recently too, because he's making less than he was before. And we're like, but this was the agreement. And it's like, well, it doesn't matter. He's making, you know, $100 less, but of course, when he's making more and he has made more before, we didn't reapply because we didn't know. And so now it's just, what, every time he switches a job or every time he gets a raise or something, we have to reapply and be like, oh, he's making more money now. Like, it's just, it's ridiculous. Sorry, go ahead.
It's unfortunate. It's the legal process, and support and visitation are not tied to each other for a very specific reason. If the non-custodial parent becomes unemployed, there's no reason that they shouldn't be a part of their child's life. I know this really well. Conversely, if they are paying support, but they're a terrible human being and can't be trusted with their children, you shouldn't have support be that ticket to be able to do whatever you want to that kid, with possibility of running off, things like that. So it's not a shitty balance that, because custodial parents have to play with a court system who is honestly just at the point where they rubber stamp most things. There's a lot of you know, things that kind of get abused in that process, but it's the same for everything. How many people do we know that are abusing the welfare system? They're abusing the support system. They're doing the exact thing, same things that you're talking about with parental alienation. The assault thing, I think that's that. I kind of want to say there's got to be a way to handle that, especially if someone's saying, come over, see your kids. Here's the text message that showed. And then her sisters or her brothers beat the hell out of me. That, you know, and I'm sorry that we've lost that person because of such an evil piece of crap. But the only you know, solace that I can get from that is those kids will realize it at some point. And if that parent thought that they were doing something good, you want to see kids who have been denied another parent in their life. You want to see the hatred that they have. You want to see what happens when they get old and they don't care that they're gone and they're hoping they're gone sooner. That's what's
going to happen. Yeah, it's sad. You know, we don't have to. Jamie and I have never, like, we try not to talk about, you know, Nick, the kid's parents at all in front of the kids, because it's just, it doesn't help. But you can tell as they get older, I mean, they're 13, 14 now, and they're just kind of like, oh, like, he's got these problems. I don't want to say, like, he's a piece of crap, because even we will correct that and be like, no, there's some things he does well. But, like, they know. They grow up and they realize it. You don't have to teach them like that.
We all suck as parents. And I can tell you, because of, you know, my ex and I get along reasonably well. You know, our relationship was pretty terrible, and I was a pretty terrible father, would be the first to say it. But our relationship's gotten better over the years, and it isn't that, you know, we can't be in the same room. I know people that are like that. Oh, I can't be in the same room as them. Well, I could be in the same room, and we'll talk, and we'll have a good conversation, stuff like that, about our shared grandchildren, which are fabulous. But you know, it's the people grow up, and a lot of these times when people are having kids and all these anger and fight, people don't know what the hell they're doing in a lot of cases, especially when they're younger. Younger parents are going to be very explosive because the emotions are so high. And then after you get 20 years of life behind you, you suddenly realize, why do I care what the hell, you know, pants they're wearing to pick up? You know, it doesn't friggin' matter. Yeah. As long as I get time with the kid, that's all that matters. So, yeah. And that's what it should be. And I've seen moms who have constantly set up fathers like that and abuse the system. But the best way to do is just document and use the system against them, because got news for you, judges sniff out that shit pretty quick. Oops, sorry.
So, Reinhold, go ahead and give us your thoughts on this one, and then we'll get to our last story. Oh, you are muted.
Sorry, I'm muted. Yeah, I see it occasionally. I don't have, you know, children myself and family, that sort of thing. But I do have, you know, people in my life who have situations like that where the kids are fully aware after a certain point what the parents are like, right? And they might have bought into certain things and for a while when they were younger, and it really hurt their growing up because of it. But once they get of a certain age, they kind of start to realize what's going on. And I know people who won't speak to their other parent because of things that have happened. They're just kicking them out of their lives. And then my wife's situation with her parents and everything else. I see all that. That's why I am so glad and lucky that I grew up in a situation where I never had any of that or had to deal with any of it. I have my own experiences growing up and issues and things I had to deal with and difficulties, but it was never family that was the problem in my growing up. So I have a hard time. I see this. So I see the things going on. Like I said, that I was talking earlier or mentioned earlier about how Canada doesn't do that renegotiating your child support because of the story from Dave Foley and what happened to him, where he was divorced at a time when he was making a lot of money on news radio and Kids in the Hall was still doing residuals and everything else. And he was making a lot of money, and then that dries up. He's an actor. And he went back to try to get that renegotiated, and they're like, nope, you need to still pay this amount of money. And there's no way he could do it. He had to leave the country and not be able to go back to Canada. As a result, not being able to see his kids for fear of getting arrested and thrown in jail. So it's the bureaucracy again, you know, issues that should be looked at and with care and concern and trying to do what's best for the, for each side ends up becoming rubber stamped bureaucratic. This is how things go. One size fits all because they don't have the time or the care to do it. So that's the nature of government.
Yep. All right. Last one. I'm a part-time financial coach. I got into it because I made a lot of financial mistakes in the past. I wanted to help others avoid the mistakes I made and do the best they can for their families. I'm also a licensed broker and investment advisor because I wanted to be able to help my clients with investment advice as well, which is illegal without the proper licenses. In addition to paying substantial licensing fees on a regular basis, my state also requires me to pay what they call a professional privilege tax in the amount of $400 every year. I call this 'cause they can tax, because I can't think of a good reason for this tax other than that they think they can get away with it charging financial advisors who are generally perceived as having high incomes. While financial advisors certainly have high incomes, most people don't realize it takes several years of building a practice to achieve that. New financial advisors often make very little, especially part-time ones. This unnecessary tax incentivizes FAs to sell expensive products that aren't in their clients' best interest, just so they can be profitable. I refuse to do so, but I'm sure there are many who have succumbed to the temptation. See Wells Fargo. It's just another example of government hurting small business owners and consumers. You know, this is one that surprises me because they actually go after this pretty aggressively. I know a little bit about the financial world. I used to be mortgage lending, which is different, but I worked in the bank and, you know, I was a banker before that. I set up accounts and I can certainly see how the incentive structure is where it's at. The best example I have was kind of the one that made national news like a decade ago. And it's if you gave like veterinary advice over the phone, like just been like, oh yeah, don't give your dog that. Like it's illegal unless you have a license, even if it's just like you being like, yeah, don't give your dog a chicken bone. And like, it actually became a whole case and like got prosecuted and everything like that. But the fact that they go after these things and I mean, as a restaurant, we have like the business fees, like I have to pay all these licenses to show that I'm doing the right thing. So this is what I do have experience with. I have to pay all these licenses and fees and everything. And I'm like, okay. But then there's just the, to be a restaurant license. And I'm just like, but all the rest of it, like I did the health one. I did the safety one. I did the electrical one. I did the like I paid for all these. And then it's like, but if you're going to be a restaurant, and it's just that kicker at the end of the year, it's like, you know, $5,000 a year. And you're just like, this one's for nothing. Like this one is just to exist. Like the rest of it is in place. The health stuff that you care about is in place. This is just a to exist license. It is ridiculous. I'm going to give each of you 1 minute. Brian, go ahead. And then say goodbye to everybody as well.
I don't even know. I just seeing people get penalized for just common sense on things. There are plenty of hucksters out there. There are plenty of sycophants and things like that that just want to take people's money. This is kind of where the government's terrible at it. Once again, picking winners and losers. We live in a very interconnected social media age where someone can say a terrible thing, that they had a terrible experience with somebody. Why can't we just let society fix that one itself as opposed to trying to wrap it up in licensing and other stupid crap like that? So Rhino, go ahead.
So you mean cancel culture? We should go with that, right?
Oh, if you want to do that, yeah, sure. But there's a small difference.
What that is.
Yeah,
but no.
No, no, we can't get into this with less than 30 seconds to go. Reinhold, you get 1 minute. We're not talking about cancel culture. We're talking about financial stuff.
Atomic bombs. No, go.
Well, no, the occupational licensing has always been just a horrible situation. It's always used by politicians to manipulate things that they shouldn't be manipulating and getting involved in stuff they shouldn't be getting involved in. There's no reason why somebody who's trying to cut somebody's hair should have more requirement for more training than someone who's, you know, working to be a veterinarian or a doctor or something like that. It's just
police officer.
It's silly. It's idiotic. Police officer is a great example. So we need, the only way we can change any of that is to just shine a light on it again and try and get that out there in the world and try to, you know, with the way we're interconnected now with social media, these things are easier to knock and fight down. We just have to have the will to do it. And we have to have the majority of people thinking that way before it's going to change.
True. Brian Reinhold, thank you so much for lending me a couple hours here on your Saturday, I guess for me morning, for you afternoon now. Happy birthday, Brian.
Thank you.
I hope you have a good one. Listeners, thank you so much for coming in. Patreon sponsors, I don't remember every single one of your names, but Chris gets tears in his eyes every time he talks about you. Thank you so much for keeping this afloat, letting us do our thing. We love you so much. I appreciate you listening to these stories. Again, the whole reason behind this is why it's personal. All these stories you heard are close to us. They've affected people that we love, and that's why we fight. Thank you so much for being part of that fight. Love you so much. Have a good one. Bye.